Welcome to the HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the Hacker News front page. It's April 24th, 2025.
And today we're here to really unpack some of the big discussions happening over on HN.
Exactly. Our mission, like always, is to cut through the noise, pull out those key insights, maybe find a few surprising bits, and just generally get you up to speed.
Yeah, give you the shortcut. Today we've got a pretty interesting mix, five main articles we're looking at.
Right. There's one about writing to the address in the GPL v2 license, which sounds... well, retro.
Definitely. Then Mark Zuckerberg saying social media is basically over.
That's a bold claim.
Uh-huh. Also, some cool tech with instant SQL results in DuckDB UI.
Okay.
Then a more serious one. The NSF director resigning amid some controversy.
Hmm.
And finally, OpenAI releasing image generation in their API. So quite the range today.
A real snapshot of the tech world. All right, let's dive in. First up, I wrote to the address in the GPL v2 license notice 2022, sending actual mail.
I know. In 2020, well, the post was from 2022, but still. Someone sent a physical letter to the Free Software Foundation address listed in the GPL v2 notice, and they got a reply.
Okay, that's already surprising. What was the reply?
They sent back the GPL version 3 license.
Huh. Not version 2. That seems odd. Why V3?
Well, the explanation given was pretty straightforward. The person sending the letter didn't actually specify which version they wanted.
Ah, so the FSF just sent the latest, presumably. But, you know, the comments on HEGEN must have jumped on that.
Oh, absolutely. It sparked a whole discussion. Like, does the notice always include the version number? Is the text just a suggestion?
Good point. And someone probably pointed out that the snippet shown might not have been the full official notice text from whatever software it came from.
Exactly. It really highlights how important the exact wording is in these licenses.
And then there's the practical side. Someone on Hacker News, always looking at the logistics, brought up the FSF's office move.
Right. That was a sharp catch.
Right.
They moved back in August 2024 from 51 Franklin Street to 31 Milk Street.
So would the mail even get there?
Probably, yeah. Standard mail forwarding usually lasts 12 months, maybe longer if they arranged it. So for a 2022 inquiry, getting a reply later, it likely worked.
But it does raise a bigger point, doesn't it, about maintaining contact info in licenses over decades. What happens when maintainers disappear or organizations change?
That's the real challenge, especially for long-lived open source projects. It's something maybe we don't think about enough. This whole physical letter thing, though, it really seemed to fascinate people on HN.
Yeah, the act itself. It felt, I don't know, almost alien to some commenters, especially younger tech folks. Like, who sends letters?
It's true. It's like a time capsule. Which led to this whole side discussion about mail accessibility. Is it really universal?
Well, theoretically, maybe. But people brought up good counterpoints on HN. What about people without stable housing? A fixed address isn't guaranteed.
Yeah, sometimes online access, maybe at a library, is actually more reliable for some people than postal mail. It flips the assumption, doesn't it?
Mm. And just the general hassle. People shared stories about confusing post office rules, trying to find a working pen.
Oh, the working pen, yes. And someone mentioned the nightmare of trying to send a stamped self-addressed envelope internationally. Like, how do you even buy Nepalese stamps from the U.S.?
Huh, right. It makes you appreciate email. Which then led to talk about handwriting.
Yeah, when was the last time you really used a pen for something important? People were saying, like, signing house papers or passport stuff where their signature didn't look right.
It's funny how disconnected we are from it. Though some people on HN still swear by pen and paper for notes for the tactile feel.
True. There's that debate, too. Physical versus digital notes. Pros and cons to both, I guess.
So this whole experiment, was it just checking if the address worked or something deeper?
Hard to know the original intent, but it definitely sparked a conversation about communication technology, physicality, maybe just poking at the foundations in a tangible way.
Interesting stuff from a simple letter. Okay, let's completely switch gears. Mark Zuckerberg, social media is over. Wow.
Yeah, quite the headline grabber on HN. His argument is that what Facebook was in the 2010s connecting with friends isn't their core business anymore.
So what are they now, according to him?
General entertainment and learning. Basically, competing head-on with YouTube and TikTok.
And they showed data.
Uh-huh. Data suggesting people are spending way less time looking at content from actual friends on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, that sounds plausible. But the HN comments, I bet they weren't buying it wholesale.
Not at all. Lots of skepticism. Was this natural evolution, or was it Meta chasing engagement and ad dollars, even if it meant sacrificing the social part? That word, inshittification. it came up a lot.
Right. The platform decay theory. Maximize profits, user experience suffers. And the question of whether users want this algorithmic feed or are they just hooked?
Exactly. Are the algorithms serving us or exploiting psychological loops? Someone brought up the rat and cocaine button analogy, which is pretty stark.
Oof, yeah. So where are people having actual social interactions online then? Group chats came up, right?
Yeah. Lots of discussion on HN about group chats being the new space. More private, focused, no ads.
But less discovery, right? You have to actively share things. No serendipity.
True. And while you have things like Blue Sky or Mastodon replacing some aspects of Twitter, there isn't really a big Facebook replacement for that friend-centric model.
And people on HN were definitely complaining about Instagram feeds now being mostly ads, suggested posts, scams, burying the stuff from people they actually follow.
It fuels that idea that maybe nonprofit or smaller community platforms are the way forward for genuine connection, though scaling is always the issue there.
Was there any argument that Facebook was sort of forced into this? By users changing habits, by the competition?
That perspective was definitely present in the comments too. The attention economy argument. Maybe they had to pivot to stay relevant. It's that chicken and egg thing again.
And it's hard to ignore the irony, isn't it? Zuckerberg saying social media is over while still running. Well, Meta. Even with Reality Labs layoffs, the core is still there.
Precisely. So is it a real shift or just rebranding? The HN consensus seemed to lean heavily towards strategic repositioning.
Makes sense. Okay, let's move to something more technical. Instant SQL for results as you type in DuckDB UI.
Yeah, this one's neat. For anyone working with data, it sounds incredibly useful.
So the UI shows you SQL results while you're typing the query.
That's the idea. Instant feedback. You see the results shape up as you add clauses, catch errors immediately.
Wow. Okay. I can see how that would be a huge productivity boost and great for learning SQL too, presumably.
Absolutely. And DuckDB is popular in the HN crowd, you know, for running SQL directly on data files without a big server setup. Hmm. This UI feature makes that local exploration even smoother.
So the HN discussion likely focused on the tech side, performance, how it works under the hood, use cases.
You'd imagine so, yeah. Getting that instant feedback without slowing things down would be the key technical challenge. Sounds like a solid tool for data folks.
Cool. All right, shifting tone again, the NSF director resigning. That sounds concerning.
It does. The news itself, the director of the National Science Foundation stepping down, combined with the context of grant terminations, job cuts, and general controversy. It definitely raised alarms on Hacker News.
What was the general feeling in the comments?
A lot of concern, disappointment. Some people expressed frustration, this idea of leaders leaving instead of staying to fight, potentially making things worse faster.
That's a tough position. What were the options discussed? People mentioned things like disagree and commit.
Right, or disagree and get fired, or try to subvert things quietly. But then the political reality came up.
The director is a presidential appointee.
Exactly. Serves at the pleasure of the president. Which led to debate on HN about how independent the NSF really is or should be. Mm-hmm. Someone joked about the secret option of convincing the boss, but, well, unlikely in some climates.
Yeah. And you saw empathy for people who've tried to fight from within bureaucracies, right? The burnout.
Definitely. People shared experiences of hitting walls, feeling like resistance was futile. The idea of work to rule came up doing the bare minimum as protest.
But with budget cuts and firings? You either comply or you don't, really. Partial compliance isn't much of an option.
Pretty much. And that's where resignation becomes a powerful tool, as argued on HN. You control the timing, you can make a statement, raise the alarm publicly.
Like other officials who've resigned on principle.
Exactly. And the impact isn't abstract. One commenter shared a story about an NSF grant for STEM outreach in a disadvantaged area getting cut. All that work. Mm. Gone.
Mm. That brings it home.
It does. And it feeds into the broader HN concern about losing experienced, thoughtful leaders in science administration and what that means for U.S. research long term.
The argument being that resigning on principle is stronger than staying in a compromised situation.
Yeah, it was definitely a viewpoint expressed.
Yeah.
That a high-profile resignation sends a clear signal that something is wrong.
A worrying situation for science funding. Okay, one last piece of news. OpenAI releases image generation in the API.
Straightforward. But significant. OpenAI is making its image generation tech, like DALL-E presumably, available for developers to integrate via an API.
So anyone can potentially build apps that create images using OpenAI's models.
Essentially, yes. It opens the door for developers to incorporate this capability into their own products and services.
The potential seems huge. Marketing, design, education, games, all sorts of areas could see new tools pop up.
For sure. It's a big step in democratizing access to this kind of advanced AI. The AGEN discussion, you'd assume, would cover the technicals, the costs, the inevitable ethical questions, and of course, all the cool potential use cases.
Another sign of how fast AI is moving. Okay, so that wraps up our five stories from the Hacker News front page for April 24th, 2025.
It really was a diverse set today, wasn't it? From old school mail and license legalese to AI image generation and the future of social media.
But there are threads connecting them, you know? The tension between old and new tech, how we communicate, the integrity of institutions like the NSF, the impact of code and platforms on society.
Absolutely. All themes that resonate strongly with the Hacker News community.
So, maybe a final thought to leave you with. As this tech keeps evolving so quickly, how do we balance all the innovation with core values? Things like community, real access, keeping our institutions trustworthy.
And what's the role of communities like Hacker News, and maybe even individual actions like sending a letter, in shaping where all this goes?
Something to ponder. Thanks for tuning in to this deep dive on the HN Pod.